everyone, and welcome back to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am the Star Colts Insider, Jim Aiello, and I am joined, as always, by fellow insider and co-host, Joel A. Erickson. Joel, it's Ravens week, and we're just going to be honest with you guys, like, off the bat. I think our podcast gets broken into segments of, like, the Colts topics we want to talk about, matchup, and then whatever nonsense comes into our brain. Well, we promise you, nonsense will continue on this podcast. We will have nonsense meal-related. But we are going to, I think we're going to maybe ditch a little bit of like that first part of the, just Colts centric topics. We like talking about it because this matchup is so intriguing and it's so important to the Colts season. Like this is what everybody's been waiting for, is like a real AFC contender test. Where are the Colts? Well, this is the gauge week. And again, we can talk about why that might be influenced a little bit just because of some injuries and guys that are out. But again, like I think for the most part, if you get, you know, if all those guys that are on the close contact list for the Ravens actually play this week, I think this is even with Stanley out, even with Humphrey out, I think this is a great test for the Colts. And if they show up well here and win this game, I think you have to consider them true contenders in the AFC. So let's start there. If they win this game, are you considering them contenders in the AFC?
I'm not there.
Not even if they beat the Ravens?
Nope.
Why not?
There's still some weaknesses with this team that are kind of glaring. The running game is the big one. And I know that generally you don't think of the run. I think if you're going to throw something out of your team in the 2020 NFL, it's a running game.
Sure.
But I don't think you feel like that with Phillip Rivers as your quarterback. So I think he's playing well, but I still think you would rather him not have to carry the whole thing himself. And also, the Ravens are, I don't know, they're not like a fool's gold 5-2, but they're kind of in a weird spot as they come in here. Like they're 5-2, but their offense, they don't feel good about their offense. And
which, by the way, is just like, it's just like the rich complaining about how much money they have.
That's true.
They're scoring 29 points a game, by the way. Just so we're out, that's out there. Like they're like, our offense is dysfunctional. We don't know what we're doing. It's like 29 points a game. Okay.
And they just put up like 460 yards on the Steelers.
Yeah, that's like my gold shoes are too tight. All my 50s won't fit in my wallet type of stuff. But whatever.
Yeah. But they also, I think the other thing is that they lost two starting linemen. I think everybody knows that they lost Ronnie Stanley last week.
Yeah.
But they also lost, oh boy, I'm going to do this wrong. I'm going to go with Tyree Phillips.
Okay.
Is that how to pronounce that? I apologize to the Phillips family if that's wrong. I kind of apologize to the Phillips family both ways because I very clearly don't know. But he's a starting guard for them. That's two starting offensive linemen down. And I think you and I were talking about this a little earlier in the day, but if the Colts were down Anthony Costanzo and Mark Lewinsky, it'd be like DEFCON, whatever the right number is around here. Like alarm bells would be going off everywhere. So, yeah.
You're making my point for me, though, and this is what I'm going to say.
Okay. I'll listen.
The point that when you said if they'd beat the Ravens, you're not going to, because the Colts are a flawed team. You just named another contender that is a flawed team, but every contender is a flawed team right now. The Chiefs have pretty noticeable flaws right now. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers we just watched have noticeable, I know the NFC, but we're just talking about the best teams. Like the Packers have flaws. The Seahawks defense is trash. Like the Titans defense is trash. Like every team that you go through that you think might be a Super Bowl contender has a pretty serious flaw.
Yeah, no, you have a point there. Maybe it's just a feel thing.
Okay with that. I'm just, yeah.
Maybe it's a feel thing. And then the other thing I think is maybe that there's some, I think maybe Colts fans can agree with me. There's some leftover residue from last year's 5-2.
That's fair. That's very fair.
I think there's a lot of stuff that's going on with how this team is covered and how fans are responding to this Colts team that has to do with last year at this time.
Well, explain that.
Like,
what do you mean by the team? How this team is covered?
I don't know. I think that, and I'm not speaking about everybody else, but I think, like, I mean, even at the start, we really, really, really just dragged Phillip Rivers around along behind a bus after the Cleveland game.
I just said he wasn't very mobile. I still feel good about that.
we really hammered him. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's fair, but maybe it's not. Maybe he's not like the way it was. If that week felt like, I don't know. Like, I mean, we had people seriously saying whether or not they should bench him.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, that feels wrong.
It was wrong.
Yeah. Like in hindsight, that was wrong and it feels wrong. And I think that that's tied to how hard Jacoby Brissett fell off the table last year. I think that every time Rodrigo Blankenship misses a kick,
yeah,
it's a bigger deal.
Flashbacks.
Because of what happened with Vinatieri last year. Like he missed two extra points last week and I kind of just sort of chalked it up as like, okay, that's kind of weird. But there's also like a little part of you, I think, that's like, oh no.
I know you're right, because when you say Vinatieri, it's like saying Voldemort. I'm like, ugh. Like don't, it's he who shall not be named, Joel.
I think the other thing is just, you know, it just feels like this 5-2 start, like it doesn't feel like Colts fans are super excited about it. They're 5-2, but Colts fans are like, okay, when's the shoe going to drop? But I think that's directly related to last year.
I think that's fair. I will say that the criticism of Rivers was unfair, and not because like, oh, all of a sudden he's a great quarterback who's thrown 6 touchdowns and 1 pick the last 2 weeks, but because we probably should have maybe more anticipated the roller coaster ride that it was going to be. Like, you look back at Rivers' career, and there are a lot of interceptions, and there are a lot of bad boneheaded plays, but there's also a lot of great that comes with it. And what Frank Reich has been trying to tell us since he came here, I mean, he didn't want to highlight the flaws, but what he was trying to say was there's going to be some bad stuff that he does. It's just, there's more good stuff that he does that outweighs it. Like he's not on the Patrick Mahomes scale from Mitch Trubisky to Patrick Mahomes is the 1 to 10 scale. Like, no one is saying that Phillip Rivers is at the 10, you know what I mean? He's somewhere in the middle, and we're trying to figure out where that is. But like, there wasn't when during that week, and I think the week you're referring to is post Browns week. It was like, yeah, like you said, DEFCON 5 or whatever. And just because I think, yeah, it was like a here we go again, and anticipating percent fall at the table is also some of those worst fears of Rivers realized. Some of those bad things that he does kind of all came to life. But again, you see the way he rebounds and can respond. I think he's got that extra gear that we never saw with Brissett. So I just want to say, I get a long-winded way of saying, hey, we trashed Rivers. We probably trashed him. It was probably right to go after him, but not in the way we did. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think just as
– he was like bad.
The idea that multiple people said that he should be benched is – that looks really bad right now.
Yeah, I haven't heard from some of those guys, some of the national guys that were calling for the benchings.
Well, Nate Burleson I saw on Good Morning Football earlier this week. I flipped it on, and Nate Burleson was like, I need to apologize to Uncle Phil a little bit. That doesn't mean he's the thing is like, I think, you know, if you're a Colts fan, you want him to be Bengals and Lions Phillip all the time.
Sure.
That's not going to happen. But if you go back to what we were saying at the beginning of the year, I think this is what we were saying. There's going to be some good, there's going to be some bad, but he elevates the passing game. And you just have to get to a point where you minimize the mistakes he makes.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty much held true. That's basically what he's been this year. Like, the passing game is much better, much more capable. Are there issues? Yeah. But that doesn't mean that it's not terrible.
I agree. I also just realized that when you said the Bengals and Lions, that all of Rivers' top 3 passing games came against cat teams.
Are you saying cats can't handle the air?
I guess not, because his 3 leading yard, 371, 363, and 262 are against the Lions, Bengals, and Jaguars. So,
Then should the Colts be concerned that there's not a ton of those cat games left on the schedule?
Yes, they also, but they should be happy there's no Ohio games left on the schedule, because Bengals were good. Actually, you're right. So no,
yeah,
that was the defense. Yeah, so you're right. I don't know. I don't know.
This is the hard hitting football analysis that listeners of the Colts Cover 2 podcast came here for.
I know. I can divert anything into a cat conversation. Let me just tell you. usually, as Joel can tell you, you guys don't use them to see the podcast, but usually during the podcast, the cat tries to jump in on the podcast with us.
Is this a bonus like diversion into something that's not football? Because
you got something.
I don't know if we've ever discussed this.
What's that?
Do you consider yourself definitively a cat person?
No. I had a dog growing up too. I love dogs.
Okay.
I'm
very strong dog person.
See, you can be both. You can live both worlds.
I can't really.
It's the black and white cookie, man. You can do both.
I don't know. I'm really strong dog. Like, there are cats in the world that I like, but but I like almost every dog.
That's okay. So here's my argument for cats versus dogs: is that everybody says dogs are the man's best friend and all that stuff. But here's the thing: you barely have to work for it. Dogs are just gonna love you no matter what. Cats, you gotta work, man. You gotta earn it.
Yeah, but they still might not love you even if you do stuff that matters.
Nah, mine does. We have two. One loves me, and one loves my wife.
Yeah, there's a lot of houses like that though. Like, yeah. Do you have to keep your cat separated?
Yes, unfortunately, we do.
See, there's a lot of families like yours.
Cats and dogs don't historically get along very well. Joel, so
I know, but dogs historically get along with other dogs.
That's fair. That's true.
They just want love.
I agree. See, but they're easy. It's easy love. You don't have to work for it. It means more when you have to work for it.
See, I disagree. I like it a lot better when the dog is just there all the time. Thinks you're the greatest thing in the world.
Well, that's what my cat, the one you see all the time, she comes and cuddles with me no matter what. I walk in the door, she comes right to me. Like, she does all those doggy things. It's just that when my wife comes in, she's like, meh.
I mean, No. I'm a heavy dog.
I love dogs.
I had a cat growing up that I really liked. And then one of my buddies has a cat that's like awesome. He's like a dog. Bubba just wants to hang out.
Yeah. See, we had a cat that died that was like that. Super, like, super cuddly, like, weirdly, just very much like a dog. It was strange.
But I've also been around cats that I was pretty sure were plotting a way to kill me.
And they are. There always are. Like, there's always a plot to kill you if they need to get out. If they feel like they're trapped.
Yeah, like, I don't trust that. I'm here with the dogs.
No cat will go back. Like, you hear all those stories about, like, you know, a house being destroyed by a hurricane and a dog going in to save the person. No cat's doing that. No chance.
Also, and this might be the trump card. Like, do cats recognize your emotions?
Yeah. No, they do.
Oh, okay. Well, that doesn't, because
like, I think, dog, I mean, dogs like, definitely do.
If you're sad, your dog is like, oh, I got to be in the lap. I got to be right there. Like, you know, there's some real benefit to that man's best friend thing.
So when my old cat died, the one that loves me that doesn't really care about my wife, when that cat died, that was my wife's cat. The one that doesn't care about her cuddled with her like all night because she knew she was distraught, even though they weren't like the best of friends. It was very nice.
Okay.
So like you can, again, I don't think they're quite as sensitive as dogs in that way. And again, they are way more like lonery animals, but I think you can be both. I think you can be both. I will have a dog when I have like a house.
Wait, is it a both and?
It's a both and.
Are you saying cats and dogs are both and?
I think that's the hottest take. Like, is it like, are you a cat person, a dog person? Or are you a both and person? I think there are few of us out there who are both ands.
Oh yeah. Both and is definitely that's definitely the hot take.
All right. Well, let's get back to the Colts.
We stumbled right into one there.
I was going to say, we still have one saved up for later, but who knows how long that one will take. So we'll save that for the end. Our discussion of food and meals. Good luck. Get ready, guys. Cause you'll be doing some voting in the spirit of this week. You'll be doing some voting later on.
And our take is kind of controversial on the meals. So
yeah, I'm excited about this because it depends. I'm not excited because I'm depressed to see how many people are wrong. there are a lot of you out there, I'm afraid, that are wrong. Okay. But yeah, so no, back to the Colts and buying whether or not this is an AFC contender. I'll say, I mean, I guess, you know, the fair way to say it was like at the end of November, you'd feel a lot better after two Titans games and a Packers game thrown in there too, along with this one. But I will say, like, I'll be more comfortable in my assessment of the Colts as a surefire playoff team if they're 6-2 having beaten the Ravens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if they're 6-2, I think at that point you start thinking of them as a playoff team. And then you're talking about, like, are they going to get in there for the division? Is it going to be a wild card? That kind of thing.
Well, yeah. And also what you're talking about is once you've beaten the Ravens in the AFC, pretty much all you have left to discuss is can they beat the Chiefs?
And the Steelers.
Oh, yeah, and the Steelers. That's a good call. I forgot about the Steelers, and they're really good and undefeated. So
I think one thing, though, that would be would probably encourage me as far as them being AFC contenders, that I think if they beat the Ravens, I think that means that you feel a lot better about the offense than maybe you do right now. Because this is a very difficult matchup for the offense.
That's perfect. Perfect place to start. So I don't know if you have numbers in front of you, but in terms of where the Baltimore Ravens are defensively, where are they against the run and then against the pass? Because I'd be curious just to know my gut, I'm going to pulling up the numbers now. My gut is that they're an elite run stopping team and then have some really, really opportunistic defenders, but that's,
they are not what you'd expect. They're kind of just a team that just stops you.
Okay. They are an elite run-stopping team, though. They're, like, eighth.
Their yards per carry, though, they're, like, 17th. But that's not going to matter against the Colts because they're terrible. But
they also only allow 18.9 points a game, which is, I think, let's see, second.
It's a really good defense. But, I mean, you can put up some points on them if you get a good game from your quarterback. The Steelers got a really, like, efficient game from Ben Roethlisberger last week.
Sure.
Beat them.
No, they can't. But if you again, I didn't watch that game because we were watching the Colts. It was happening at the same time. For what I saw, though, there was the Ravens defense was smothering them in the first half. I think that was
it's a really good defense.
So one guy I wanted to ask you about.
They're weirdly 29th in interception rate, which is shocking to me.
That is shocking because, like I said, Marcus Peters is among the most opportunistic defenders, I think, in the NFL. So that is weird, but again, they're not giving up.
But, I mean, as long as we're talking about it, I feel like the presence of Marcus Peters, just his sheer presence on the team is like reason to be concerned if you're a Colts fan, because like Rivers' fatal flaw is interceptions. And that's kind of like the only thing Marcus Peters does.
Correct. My gut here, what I'll say is to you is, like, you and I talked about this earlier in the week. We kind of compared him to Xavier Rhodes, only kind of like a more gambly Xavier Rhodes. So he's a guy who takes more risks. So what I like about that matchup for Philip Rivers is that he is a smart enough quarterback, and Frank Reich is a smart enough offensive play caller that I think they can take advantage of a guy like that on occasion. Like, I think you and I talked about this with Harrison Smith. Like, they were opportunities where they try to take advantage of a gambling guy like Harrison Smith. And they did. That was the T.Y. Hilton touchdown drop that where they just took advantage of an over-aggressive Harrison Smith. I think they can do that with Marcus Peters. So there is some, like you talked about, it's a risk throwing him because he's very talented and he's very good at reading a quarterback and jumping routes. But if you can kind of get him in over-anticipation, that's where you can beat the Ravens and take advantage.
Here's the numbers on interceptions. They only have three.
Okay. How many for Peters?
Two.
Okay.
The other one is made by a player who will not play this week.
So that is Humphrey.
Marlon Humphrey is a bigger deal than I think anyone's talking about.
No, he's I think he's their best corner. I think he's better.
Do you know what his stat line is right now?
Marlon Humphrey?
Yeah.
No, what's his, like, the passer rating against and stuff?
It's not about that. This is like you know how Darius Leonard is a big play machine?
Sure, yeah.
Humphrey has four fumbles forced this season.
Yeah, gosh, that's huge.
An interception and 2.5 sacks.
Man, that is – wow.
He's an incredible cover corner. That's a huge – there's no way you can – like, Jimmy Smith is good, but there's no way you can replace that.
No. Your passer rating against this year, it's at its high over the last 3 years, and it's at 76.5. Last year was 68.4, and the year before was 69.1. So
he's he really fell off.
Yeah, huge drop off, exactly. And it's like that's another one too. I'm looking at these numbers. You know, they sent him on the blitz 37 times last year, 15 times this year. So they're losing a lot. A guy who, like, and again, I think that probably speaks to your forced fumbles number. Is a guy who does a lot for them.
He's tied. He's tied for second on a team in sacks.
Yeah. Well, they send him a lot.
That's another thing to just talk about here. And
oh my God, they blitz so much.
They blitz a lot. They blitz fun. A lot. They're leaders, and they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They have 8 players with 2 sacks or more.
Good 8. Lord.
And at least 3 of them are either defensive backs or off the ball linebackers.
All right. So per Pro Football Reference, the Colts have blitzed 50 times. The Ravens have blitzed 135 times this year so far. That's 40. They have the highest blitz percentage in the league at 45%.
That seems like a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot, a lot. So the good thing for the Colts, and actually I kind of wrote about this in this one of these stories I got coming out this week on Philip Rivers, is that if there's one truly elite Philip Rivers skills, it's blitz identification and blitz pickup. He is incredibly good at knowing when somebody's coming, where the pressure is coming from, and adjusting the protections for that. So you and I talked about this on the phone a little bit this morning. The Colts sack rate right now, or his sack rate right now, is at 2.9% of his dropbacks. He is the hardest quarterback to sack in the NFL, and we all know his physical limitations. He is just, again, credit to the offensive line, of course, and the fact that he gets the ball out of his hand, of course. Like, those are all contributors. But he is amazing at getting the protections that he needs to prevent from being sacked. So I'm very, like, this is going to be super chess match. I actually got a chance to talk to his former teammate, Eric Weddle, who played with him at the Chargers and played with the Ravens. And he was just like, oh man, like Wink Martindale versus Philip Rivers is going to be like the ultimate chess match, because Martindale is one of the best defensive coordinators in football, crazy with the blitz stuff, and Rivers is amazing at picking it up. So like, that's an incredibly cool matchup to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the biggest matchup, because I think their run defense is good enough that, and the Colts offense is so bad that,
yeah. You're just writing off, huh? That's where we're at.
Yeah.
It's fair. I'm just, yeah, it's crazy.
If you can't run against the Lions and the Bengals, you can't run.
Can't run on the cat teams.
Jim out here going, like middle schooler picking NCAA tournament teams with the podcast today.
That's at this point. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not ashamed of it either. If I could figure out like I could figure out what the Browns and Jaguars have in common, I'll let you know if I can come up with a good like weakness for the Colts, but I don't have it yet.
I haven't looked yet. So I'm a little bit behind this week through all of my own doing.
Well, we all are, because there's stuff happening in the world, Joel.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're – it's the return of Mac football?
Correct. And the massive debates about breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
If you don't think – by the way, if you think that I did not turn my TV to Mac football a little bit last night, on Wednesday night, you don't know me very well. I checked in on some games. Checked in.
That's what people.
Rough one for the for a few of those teams. Feel a little bit bad for Ball State, local team. A little bit bad. Trying. I know we have Ball State grads out there. Don't want to insult them, but a little bit of a rough one for them in the end there. Stuff going on. Haven't looked. How are the Ravens against the tight end? That's the big question.
That's a good question. Why? I mean, yeah. So what are you hoping for?
Well, if you're the Colts, you're hoping that they're not that good against the tight end.
They are. I'll tell you, they're actually, in terms of yards allowed to the tight end, they are 16th, middle of the pack.
That's okay.
In terms of catches, they are toward the bottom. They're like, they've given up 36, which is like, 21st or 20 on the other end. So what is that? Like 11th or 12th most. So there you go. So yeah, they're not like, again, there's not, I mean, I think you and I, as we've gone through the numbers, we've kind of discovered there isn't a true weakness to this team. What I will say, and you and I talked about this earlier this week too, is that getting after the passer is one thing, but we have to talk about this. And I don't think it's come up anywhere. Yannick Ngakoue is making his Ravens debut this weekend.
Oh, is that true?
Like, he didn't play last week, did he? I didn't think he was allowed to. Or am I crazy? Did he play? Oh, no. Wait, no. Yeah, I don't think he played. I could be wrong. He did. I'm sorry. He played against Pittsburgh. I'm crazy.
That trade happened early enough for them to get him.
Yeah. I thought he had to wait the week because of COVID. Okay, so he's not making his debut. But the more important part is that he has been like Anthony Costanzo kryptonite in his career. I think he has 7.5 sacks against the Colts. He got one while he was in Minnesota earlier this year. So now he gets a chance to go at Costanzo again. So yeah, weirdly plays for the Vikings and Ravens and still gets like the old Jaguar schedule, getting to face the Colts twice. But he has been, he's had really, really good games against Costanzo and against the Colts in general. So that's, and then obviously you got Calais Campbell down there. He is still, it still boggles my mind, by the way. Have we talked about this recently, that they traded a 5th-round pick for Calais Campbell, and that the 5th-round pick that they got was for trading a kicker during the preseason last year? They traded a kicker for Calais Campbell, Joel.
That's one of those chess checkers situations.
Incredible. So anyway, I got Calais Campbell. One guy I wanted to ask you about, because you're a college film junkie and college football guy. What can we expect to see out of Patrick Queen this week, and what has he been doing in Baltimore?
If you pay attention to linebacker, like, he's kind of, he can run. Like, that's the big thing. All LSU guys can run, every single one.
Okay.
And that's another guy who's just had kind of an all around. He doesn't have an interception yet, but he's got 2 forced fumbles, sack, 2 sacks, 4 tackles for loss. Like, he's up there in the defensive rookie of the year consideration right now.
Okay.
That's an important player for them, but I think the way the Colts offense is playing right now, I think you can kind of get away from him, get around him a little bit.
Okay.
Because he can only cover one person at a time. I'm really interested in the tight ends. Well, if Humphrey was there, I'd be thinking about the tight ends even more, because then you wonder about your matchups at wide receiver and corner. But those tight ends against some of the safeties for the Ravens, you know, the Ravens safeties don't have quite the pedigree that the corners do.
Okay.
And so some of those, like, down the seam matchups are the ones that interest me the most this week.
That is really interesting. I mean, well, I guess one thing you and I kind of talked about wanting to get into was just the way the Colts do attack people in the passing game, especially. And we should get into the running game too on Wilkins Taylor and see where you're at. But in the pass game, especially, they haven't, like, you and our editor Nat Newell, and we've been kind of having this conversation ever since Monday about, like, how weird it is that the Colts don't seem to have a number one receiver. Maybe I think Greg Doyle wrote it in his story. Doesn't have a number one receiver. Doesn't have a number two receiver. This team right now, they have, like, I think it's 8 guys that have more than 100 yards, but T.Y. Hilton has 251. So it's between 100 and 251. And that's a lot of different targets you're throwing to. And Rivers, again, as we remember from last week, he hit 11 guys during the game. What are you going to think of this passing attack? Because I think the cool thing is that it does feel somewhat Frank Reichy, in that he loves to spread the ball around and that people don't really know where the ball is going.
Well, I think the biggest thing is it's working.
Yeah, that's true too.
Like, do I wish that they had, if you're the Colts, do you wish you had a Davante Adams or somebody like that who could go for 15 catches if you don't cover him the right way? Yeah, probably. It'd be fun to have that dominant player. But they've made a lot of plays in the passing game, a lot of explosive plays in the passing game too, just running it around. You know, Zach Pascal, I think, is quietly having a really good season. 19 catches, 242 yards, 2 touchdowns. Marcus Johnson is becoming, like, not just the big play guy, but also, like, the guy that Rivers goes to when he desperately needs, like, a big completion.
Is he leading the – I mean, he must be leading the Colts in receiving yards like the last couple of weeks, right?
Oh, he has to be because at 227, he's fourth on the Colts, and he didn't play the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, so he has – again, if you're talking about a quote-unquote number one receiver, it's been Marcus Johnson the last couple of weeks.
He's averaging 20.6 yards per catch.
That's real good.
So
he went for 108 against the against the Bengals. And then I was trying to say, I didn't know if he was the number one receiver in the.
I really liked the way they mixed up the tight ends last week. They all got work. They felt like they all had a role to play on that game. If they can do that going forward, I think that's good too. There's a play that didn't work. I wrote about it for my story about Rivers dumping on plays that don't look like they're going anywhere. But it was a formation that I think it's the kind of formation that could give defenses headaches. They had all three tight ends in the game with Jordan Wilkins and Jonathan Taylor in the backfield together.
I love that three tight end sets.
A really interesting personnel thing. They ran on the goal line. I kind of want to see them do that out at like second and one at the 40. And
they did a bunch of funky stuff, man. Remember, did you see the play where Costanzo was Mo Alie-Cox was lined up at left tackle?
Unbalanced line. Yep.
Yeah. Some great stuff. I mean, the Nyheim Hines touchdown, like the Trey Cat, as you love to call it.
Trey Cat.
It was kind of a, like, breakout your, like, the weird Frank Reich game.
Also, I think it's important, like, but just as an aside real quick, the Trey Cat is diverse. They've run two plays, and I know that.
He hasn't even thrown yet.
They haven't run a straight zone read yet. They haven't run one where the running back is going up the middle and the quarterback goes outside. They haven't done that yet because the first time they ran an inverted veer where you flip those responsibilities, it's the running back heading outside and Burton's up the middle. And then the one they ran last week was just like an old school quarterback sweep. They pulled three guys. It's like watching the Packers with Jim Taylor.
I'm not going to even talk about this just because I RIP slow pony. So
the slow pony that we've been joking, Jim and I have been joking all week about something Trey Burton said, because it may provide some insight into the death of a slow pony. Trey Burton said that he just wants them to keep scoring, because if they keep scoring, they'll keep doing it. And we were both like, and that's what happened to the slow pony.
Yeah, one bad play. I mean, seriously, I Miles Jack owes me money. I'll just say it that way. Yeah, it hurts. It hurts. And like I said, there will be a time this year, I promise you guys, where I'm going to ask Frank Reich why he hates me. The Trey Cat has worked quite well. And if they're going to go do some weird stuff in the red zone, again, given Trey's abilities as a passer, we know, it definitely seems like the way you'd want to go.
This year, listeners of the podcast, my fondest wish for the Colts season is that Trey Burton throws a Tim Tebow style jump pass.
Wait, no, that can't be your fondest wish. Your fondest wish has to be throwing the Buffalo play. Hit Trey Burton throwing the Buffalo play to Jack Doyle. It's a combination of things you love.
That's true. It's either that or it's a jump pass to Danny Pinter.
Danny Pinter is catching a touchdown pass this year.
If he throws a jump pass touchdown to Danny Pinter,
that might do it. You're right.
I might need to be resuscitated in the press box.
Be the first time, Joel. Yeah, no cheering in the press box except for amazing, cool plays like that.
Oh man, I mean, if he throws a fat guy touchdown on a jump pass,
love it. Yeah, I would love to see it.
Also, I really hope Frank Reich is listening to this, so it's like burrowed in his brain. Oh man, I could get a jump pass touchdown to Danny.
If Frank Reich listened to this podcast, he'd give the ball to Jacoby because he'd feel bad about me. He'd feel bad for me.
Also, if Frank Reich listened to this podcast, he'd be like, these guys are really, like, they're unfocused.
It's definitely that kind of week. It's definitely that kind of week. Against the Ravens, which is weird because, like I said, it's such an important matchup for them. And we want to really focus on the offensive side of the ball, but I do want to ask you, we kind of talked about the throwing all these different targets, but the running game, what are we seeing this week? Are we going to see a Jonathan Taylor dominated game? Is that going to give him a chance to, is he going to start first of all, and open with the chance to run with the ball, or is it going to be Jordan Wilkins? Like what do you think, what's your best guess on the running game this week?
I think it's going to be half and half. But I think there's a real chance that Jordan Wilkins is the first guy out.
You do? You think he might start?
Yeah. I don't have anything concrete to go on that. It's just feelings and hunches, but that's my feeling and hunch.
Based on something
fantasy. There's going to be a fantasy football podcast listener who's going to be so mad at me if they do that.
Well, yeah, because they're going to start Jordan Wilkins and then go, what the hell? I'm going to go the other way. Why not? I'm going to say Jonathan Taylor starts. I don't know what happens after that. I truly believe that Frank's going to go hot hand, and I don't know who's going to have the hot hand. I don't know if anybody will against the Ravens, but I do think he's going to get Taylor another chance to get out there and start. But, I mean, we did hear Nick Sirianni say that Jordan Wilkins earned more opportunities and he will get more opportunities. I think that's the closest we've gotten from a Colts coach committing to more Jordan Wilkins. And, again, like, I don't think there's any other way to look at this the way they played against Detroit. Like, that was very successful giving it to Wilkins and throwing it to Hines. I don't think there's any way to not keep those guys more involved.
Yeah, they've kind of gone away from them. They kind of got away from those guys in the previous two games because their production had fallen off.
Right.
They were the opposite of hot hands. And this game was the, hey, we can still do something if we get some chances. So now I think they're probably going to make sure those guys get their chances. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's, like I said, just a hunch that it's going to be – I don't know that there's going to be a lot of running room this week.
Did you see, like, some of the numbers? I wrote in a story on Monday that Jordan Wilkins was spending about 2.5 to 2.6 seconds behind the line of scrimmage, where Jonathan Taylor was at above 3 this week. And, again, like, Marlon lived above 3 last year and did fine. So I'm not saying you can't – you have to, you know, you have to get through behind the line of scrimmage. But I think, like, Wilkins seemed to have a better feel for knowing when he needed to hit it and when he needed to be patient and set up blocks. There was a couple runs where he just shook off tackles. I will say this.
Yeah, he was just playing better last week. But yeah. the question is, does that mean he'll be better every week? Because that wasn't the case before that.
Well, to me, is if Wilkins is going to run through guys the way he did, let me say it this way. I've not been impressed with Jonathan Taylor in space. I feel like he does not make guys miss enough. I know we had the Minnesota game where he did something in space against I think it was a screen or just a quick dump off pass. But like a lot of times, I just feel like he needs to do something more than to shake a defender loose, beat a guy one on one. Actually, Nyheim Hines said it in his like video recap of that touchdown. I think it was with the Colts, but like he talked about T.Y. Hilton picking up the block on the touchdown, and he's like, one-on-one in the NFL, you have to win if you're a running back. And I don't think I've seen Taylor do that enough, one-on-one, or even just making a guy miss enough that he can gain a few extra yards. Again, when he's running through people, I think it's great, and he's picking up 4 or 5 extra yards. But when he's trying to wiggle and make people miss, I've been pretty unimpressed by that.
See, the thing is, though, like, I don't think that what we saw last week from Jordan Wilkins is going to happen all the time.
And that's fair.
I haven't seen him do that his entire career. To me, he's if the hole's there, he can hit it fast and get you a lot out of it. But I don't know that he creates a lot of his own yards. He did last week at the end of the game. But,
he did, yeah.
But how much of that was the Lions had gone against the Colts for 77 plays and we're starting to get tired?
It's fair.
So I don't know. I don't feel good about – I think if you've been listening to this podcast, you can tell. I don't know. I don't feel good about the running game no matter who's back there right now. I just don't have any confidence in them to blow a hole open at all, especially against a team like the Ravens.
I agree. And so I'll say the only problem for Jonathan Taylor, and if you're right about Wilkins, is that I don't think, again, I think the Colts still feel like Jonathan Taylor is the more talented back. You don't use the pick that you did on Jonathan Taylor when you have Jordan Wilkins on the roster if you didn't think that. But the problem for Taylor in general, I guess in larger picture, is that Wilkins kind of does all the things that Taylor does. He runs hard. He can catch the ball. He's pretty good in pass protection. Like, there's not something where you have to take Wilkins off the field and get Taylor out there. You know what I mean? Like, the first play of the game last week was like, oh, it's a crossing pattern to Jordan Wilkins. They like him catching the ball. I just don't know that there's something that Taylor does that requires him to be on the field in the way that it is with Hines. Hines, again, the better route runner, the better pass catcher, all that stuff. But I'm not sure
Taylor. No, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
I don't think he's going to force his way onto the field because of his skill.
I agree with that. Interesting to see what they do. I think Wilkins is going to get the first couple carries, but I don't have anything to tell you that other than just a hunch.
Okay.
So yeah, We've gotten this far into the podcast and haven't even talked about the matchup I think most people are thinking about.
Yeah, so let's get to that side. I mean, Lamar Jackson, like, just game plan wise, what are you doing against Lamar Jackson? I know this is like perfect Joel, like high school linebacker, like get to stop the triple option. Just so gear up and listen here because he's got some good stuff.
I like, to me with the Ravens, it's I wonder if they're going to walk somebody down, whether it's Kari Willis, whether it's I don't know who, but I wonder if they're going to walk somebody down in the box.
Sure.
And basically essentially play like a 44.
Okay.
I'm writing about this today, but everyone we've talked to this week has basically said like, it's assignment football. You have to have like every guy in every gap because what they're going to do is they're going to run some of this zone read stuff where you have to cover more than one thing. They're going to run stuff where they have counters and people going back the other way and stuff like that. And the best way to defend that is to have somebody in every gap. And to do that, you have to have eight people down there because there's eight gaps. There's two A's, two B's, two C's, two D's. And you have to play really disciplined football. The Colts are a flow to the football team.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes that can hurt them with counters and stuff like that. They need to go against that tendency a little bit because you can't – against teams like this, you can't flow super hard to one side of the ball or the other. The guys on the front side of the play just have to win. Because the moment you start flowing really hard to the one side, they'll do something to get Lamar in space on the other side, and then you're in real trouble.
Okay.
So you've got to be aware of that. You've got to play good assignment football. You've got to kind of crush down if you're on the back side of the play and not leave the cutback lanes, leave stuff open, because they'll see it and exploit it. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I think that maybe you're walking a safety down and just kind of daring them to beat you through the air because Lamar hasn't really done that this year very well.
Right.
And I mean, this is something that, well, we'll throw it back to you. That's the run game that I'm kind of looking to see. What's the other thing that Lamar struggled with this year in the passing game?
Yeah. So this is a story that will be coming out later this week. He's been awful against the blitz, which is fun. If you're like shaking your head at home, you're like, that doesn't make any sense. He was incredible against the blitz. You were right. He threw 24 touchdown passes last year against blitzes, which was 10 more than any other quarterback. It was 24 touchdowns, two picks. So incredibly good against the blitz last year. However, defensive coordinators seem to be dialing up things that he's not able to interpret or isn't beating or doesn't have the weapons to beat right now. I'm trying to find the numbers I have for you on this. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. Here's passer rating goes down from 103.5 to 76.4. His yards per attempt from 8 to 5.2 and his completion percentage down from 64 to 53.9. I mean, those are all way worse when being blitzed. The Kansas City Chiefs, you guys watched that game in week 3. This was a team that was supposed to be, you know, the killer matchup. Everyone was pumped about it. The Chiefs said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to blitz him heavy, times going cover zero, sending multiple rushers at him and just take the risk. Because as you know, Joel, this is something that I know you can speak to. When you blitz or when you just play man-to-man against Lamar Jackson, it is super dangerous because what you're doing is turning – you're having a bunch of guys turn their backs on him and they're going down the field. And that's a huge – that's a way to kill – he'll kill you. If he escapes the pocket, which gets back to kind of what Joel was talking about with discipline, it's the same on the pass rush. You have to stay in your lanes. You have to keep him contained, especially if you're playing man-to-man football or blitzing, because if he escapes that, it's over. He's going to run for 50 yards on that play. So, but the Chiefs decided we're going to roll the dice. Steve Spagnuolo decided that's what we're doing, and it worked to perfection. He actually covered zero blitz 7 times. Fun part about that was – Lamar actually completed 6 passes on those 7 blitzes for 33 yards, 1 first down.
Really?
Yeah, incredibly good about it. Like they forced him to throw to the places they wanted him to throw and kept it contained. It was, like I said, it was an incredibly good game plan by the Chiefs against Lamar Jackson. So my question is, again, and you can beat him with zone. Actually, if you watched the game last week against Pittsburgh, and again, I would flip through the film as quick as I could because, you know, we're focused on the Colts, but like the Steelers our zone blitzing team. They loved a zone blitz. They actually didn't dial up the blitz too much, but they don't play a lot of man-to-man. And they did a pretty good job on Lamar in terms of containing him, running and passing. And so there are different ways to do it. So my big question going into this game, and I want you to answer it, is do you blitz the hell out of Lamar, which is very anti-Eberflus. We just talked about it. He doesn't blitz very much. He did blitz a lot against Detroit last week, 21 times, which was crazy. Crazy amount for him. But does he do it again to try to stop Lamar? Or does he say, let's sit back in our zones. It's much safer. We'll have eyes on the quarterback all the time. and we can do the thing that has gotten us here that we do best.
I go after him.
You send the man to man. I mean, you can do man blitz, zone blitz too. It's very complicated, obviously.
I go after him, and the reason is he hasn't done it well this year. And the other thing is, when you blitz, if they run, if it's not a pass play and they run, you've got another guy, another wild card in there.
Filling the holes, yeah.
Filling holes. So, yep. I dial it up. Eberflus was really good on this when you asked him about it earlier this week. He said that there's always a tough balance between doing what you do well and dealing with what other teams don't do well and quitting what they don't do well. And I think, like, Lamar's numbers have been so bad against the blitz, and it offers you something in the run game. I think you do that until it hurts you.
Okay.
I think you go in there and say, hey, can we do the same thing that these other teams do? And then when it hurts you, then maybe you start rethinking it. But I do. I think you go after him.
And those are things, like, again, you can man blitz, you can zone blitz, you can blitz with spies, you know, with Darius Leonard. So one thing, again, I mentioned earlier, and I got a bigger story coming out with Philip Rivers and Eric Weddle, but I had Eric Weddle on the phone and I was like, hey, what would you do to stop Lamar Jackson since you came from the Ravens and you know this? And he said he definitely would spy Lamar Jackson, but he wouldn't do it with a defensive lineman or a linebacker. Now, again, how well does he trust, you know, how well does he know the Colts defense? He says he watches a lot of Colts games. But just, you know, can and Darius Leonard and Bobby Okereke keep up with him? I don't know. But it is interesting in my mind to think, what would Kari or Julian Blackman do spying him all over the field? Kenny Moore spying him all over the field.
The other thing that's interesting to me is the idea of blitzing in a way that takes care of gaps.
Yep.
Because sometimes when you blitz, it puts rushers in unexpected places and it makes it harder for him to escape. Obviously, that's the most dangerous thing with Lamar is it's just those – he's so fast, just unbelievably fast. And you don't want him in the open field, like you were saying, in the man. So sometimes when you bring blitz, there's not a lot of place to escape because you're putting guys in spaces they're not usually going to be.
Right. And
it muddles stuff up a little bit.
So I think the perfect example of this recently, and again, it's weird because it was against Stafford, but the perfect example of keeping your integrity and discipline on the defensive line in those rush lanes was on the second Tyquan Lewis sack, where Matthew Stafford tried to step up into the pocket and move around. And Lewis was still standing in the place that he was supposed to be, as opposed to just rushing straight up field. And he just kind of inherited a sack. I don't even think it was his pressure. I think it was Justin Houston that got the pressure. And he kind of forced him around. If the Colts can do that, is they get pressure on certain spots, but everybody maintains their rush lanes, they can get to Lamar Jackson. Now, the big thing about Lamar Jackson, I think some guys have talked about this, it's not really about sacking Lamar Jackson. Like, you just want to keep him. If you get a sack, great. And the Steelers got a few of them, but, like, you just want to make him really uncomfortable and you want to keep him contained and you can hit him after he throws and things like that. But sacking him is not, like, number one. You know what I mean?
Right. This is kind of like a muddle rush game where you're trying. Yeah. I mean, you want to go after him. You want to get him. And Justin Houston did say some good stuff earlier this week about how if you think about that too much, you'll take something out of your pass rush and lose a little bit. But
for sure.
But you just want to be aware of it. You want to be aware of it because you don't want him running for 160 yards because if he does that, you probably lose.
Right. And so I think the Chiefs, again, playing man defense, held him to about 86 rushing yards. It was on 9 carries, though, so he was effective in that. I don't know how many were – I didn't break down the numbers in terms of design runs and scrambles. But the Steelers held him to, I think it was at 65 rushing yards. So they got gashed on the ground by the Ravens, 200 yards between Edwards and Dobbins. But they kept Lamar contained, again, both passing and on the ground. And I think that's kind of what ended up helping them win. Though I think you can make an argument that don't have to go too far into the weeds on Ravens Steelers, but they turned the ball over 4 times and still scored 24 points. So I'm not sure how well the Steelers defense, you know, again, creating turnovers is great, but they didn't really slow them down unless they were getting a turnover.
Yeah. No, the Steelers game is interesting because they gave up a ton of yards. It was just a turn. And I don't think you can expect,
right,
as Colts have been at creating interceptions this year, I don't think you can expect 4 turnovers in a game. You just can't.
I totally agree.
So you've got to be better than the Steelers were. I mean, the other thing to watch here is just those linemen being out. That might create some matchups here. I mean, DeForest Buckner against a backup guard has not gone well for the guard.
Great point.
This season. Justin Houston against backup tackles in the 2 years he's been with the Colts has not gone well for those tackles. So the line those line matchups, I think, are really interesting this week in terms of they had to put two guys on IR at the same time with their offensive line. That's tough. That's just a tough thing to deal with. You know, I brought up the the Costanzo and Glinski example. But it's just, I don't know, it's really different if you lose them both at the exact same time, right at the same time. Trying to look up who their backups are right now.
Oh, I had it up. I don't know where. No, I lost it.
There's no way whoever the tackle is anywhere near as good as Ronnie Stanley. That's just not possible.
It's Orlando Brown, actually. I'm remembering it now.
I mean, so that means that one of the tackles is DJ Fluker?
I believe so. If I check my Ravens depth chart.
That's bad for the Ravens. That's bad for the Ravens.
So what I have here is Orlando Brown at left tackle, Bradley Bozeman at left guard, Matt Skura at center, Patrick McCary at right guard. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, and then DJ Fluker at right tackle. Because I think they're sliding Brown over to the left. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's DJ Fluker playing tackle isn't good.
So, yeah, it's been bad. And, again, like you mentioned, we talked about this a little bit before, but, like, this is a team that ran for like 200 and whatever yards a game last year. And they're still, again, they're still leading the league in rushing right now, but they're not doing it nearly as a dominant pace as they were last year without Stanley and without Phillips. And again, you're already talking about like you lost Marshall Yanda last year to retirement. Like that was a huge loss. Like, again, like if you want to keep up with the Colts comparisons, Yanda was one of the best guards in football. It's like, it's almost like the Colts losing Nelson and then having to try to fill in for it. So again, they've had a lot to deal with in terms of, you know, trying to overcome some key losses and will. And again, we haven't really gotten into all the guys that are on the COVID close contact list. I won't get to practice all week. We asked Jim Harbaugh about this. He kind of said it stinks that they won't be able to practice.
You mean John
this week.
Harbaugh?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. The wrong
part. Jim Harbaugh's playing Indiana this week.
They're all coming to, yeah, so they're all coming to Indiana this week. So all the Harbaughs. John Harbaugh said earlier this week that it stinks that he's not going to get these guys to practice. But I don't know. Most of these guys, other than, I don't know, Patrick Queen, I think was on that list. I don't think a week of practice is going to really necessarily hurt them too much. I think they'll probably keep in shape. They'll probably do the things they need to do. And I don't,
yeah,
they'll be part of the virtual
meetings. I agree with that. The big deal is if one of them were to test positive and not
play. Correct. If they don't play. That's much bigger, obviously, but
I don't think that missing practice is a big deal.
I'm putting my money where my mouth is, by the way, on that, because I'm starting Matthew Stafford in a fantasy league and he's not gonna be able to practice all week. So, yeah, it's just, so yeah, he's not gonna. Isn't that right? Aren't they gonna have to fly him wherever on Saturday or Sunday for?
Yeah,
him to play?
I don't know. I don't know if I feel great about that fantasy decision, Jim. But
well, it was that or Teddy Bridgewater this week. Okay, so.
And Bridgewater has a bad matchup, right?
Correct. I have a couple leagues and Dak Prescott dying and both of them hurt. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, so, that would be bad.
So yes. But all right, well, like I said, is there anything else matchup-wise you wanted to get into in terms of Colts D versus this? I mean, again, yeah, Colts defense versus this Ravens offense. Man.
I do feel like there's a chance this is the Darius Leonard game. When they've played the Texans in the past, he's often been a very – like he's often looked at the matchup with Deshaun Watson as like a
– That's a great point.
Mano e mano.
Oh, here's a question about
also,
that.
Also, his style of spying is really interesting in this game because it's so aggressive.
Do you see him in the same light as
he's a very aggressive spy. Like yeah. A lot of his sacks aren't actually rushes. They're spies that he just decides like, okay, there's no place for him to escape. I'm going.
To this point, I wanted you to add that Frank compared him to almost being like a Lamar Jackson version of a defender, of a linebacker. I don't know where I think he was answering questions yesterday about this. I don't know. What did you think about that?
I mean, in terms of the big plays. Yeah. I mean, It's hard because you like Lamar probably runs like a 4.3 40 or something like that. But yeah, I mean, like in terms of like the way that he plays, especially sort of this different way he spies and everything, I think I think that's a good comparison.
Okay. I like that. I like that too. I thought that was interesting. And Frank seemed to really take to that when that was kind of put in front of him.
There's like a mirror image. It's like a mirror image, like superhero villain thing going on.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see. I don't know. I mean, again, this is one of those things where I want to know if Eric Weddle's right, if they should spy, or if he's just talking like a safety and wants to spy the quarterback. Yeah, that was like a, we'll see.
I gotta be honest. I feel better about Darius Leonard in the open field than I do about Kari Willis. And that's not a super like knock on Kari. I just feel like, I don't feel like I've ever thought of Darius as a guy who misses a ton of tackles in the open field.
Actually, you know, and that's a great point. I agree with you on that. And also, there was a stat point, let me put out there. I actually been waiting to use it, and I keep forgetting it. But the Colts actually lead the league in fewest missed tackles this year, at like 26 or 27. So they've been.
That has to make Matt Eberflus just so happy.
Yeah, I mean, incredibly happy. So they're not missing tackles, but no, that's not the guy I would want to spy him. Actually, I was thinking about Julian Blackman.
Yeah, but do you want to take the ball hawk out of there?
So. Jim wants to play three safeties.
Oh, okay.
And then use Blackman up and then use some combination of Tavon and George Odom as your floating kind of ball hawking safety.
Interesting. Interesting. I like leaving the linebackers on the field because I want Anthony Walker. Like if it's me when they're running the option stuff, Anthony Walker is the guy who just kills the running back up the middle.
It's true. And he can do that.
So work through traffic. And like when they run the zone read, I want Anthony Walker in there just smacking guys in the face in the middle of the game, in the middle of the line.
Well, maybe we can do both. It's a both and, Joel. You could have that on the first two downs and I can have my three safeties on third down.
If listeners don't know why we keep laughing so hard at the both and, it's because Frank says it all the time.
All the time. He actually makes fun of himself.
I feel like his use of both and this season has increased by like 75%.
It's been way up there. He kind of teases himself about it, so I don't feel too bad. Like I think Joel and I have actually considered renaming the podcast the Both And Podcast. So
we have, yeah.
Outside of Colts cover too. So that, hey, who knows? That might be coming next year. All right, final topic of the day. This is something that I'm quite passionate about. It is not the presidential election, so you guys don't have to turn it off. So there you go. That's not what we're going to be talking about. I mean, we are going to talk about meals and what is the best meal of the day. And what's the worst. So that's the interesting part of this. So I have known a lot of fools in my time who want to throw away breakfast, like dummies.
I think there's a substantial part of the populace that just doesn't eat breakfast.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to go with the old truism. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Second of all, it is way here to use a Frank Reich term. It's way more multiple than people want to give it credit for. I mean,
that's 100% true.
We just talked about it before we started the podcast. You can go anywhere from cereal and donuts to steak in breakfast and you're fine. You're still there. You're still at breakfast.
Yeah. No, there's not a lot of a disagreement here in this part of the podcast.
There is this, like, best meal. You still take dinner as your top meal, right?
Dinner is the top meal for me. Yes.
I'm taking breakfast,
because dinner can go just an infinite amount of different ways.
It's true. Dinner and breakfast run a close 1-2 for me. And so what we agree on is if you have to throw one away, you're throwing away lunch, right?
No question. Definitely throwing away lunch.
It's a no-brainer.
I frequently eat the same thing every day for lunch during the week because it's just like I just have to make sure I get a certain amount of protein and a certain amount of carbohydrates in my body so that I don't basically eat an entire bag of tortilla chips and salsa in the afternoon. I eat like a salad with 4 ounces of roasted chicken shredded on it like every day almost. Because it's just lunch is just there. Your options at lunch aren't that good either. If you're eating out, like, would you rather eat out for breakfast, which is usually like a brunch?
Great.
Lunch or dinner? There's no contest. Sandwiches and salads for lunch is just nowhere near like an omelet or anything you can get. Anything you get for dinner.
I'll say this, having researched it, zero. But every single best day of my life has started with a good breakfast. If I'm starting with eggs and bacon and sausage and an omelet and pancakes, like I'm having a good day. It's just what's happening.
Yeah. No, so one of the other reasons I'm a big breakfast guy is that during the week, I'm also a morning, like lifting weights guy. Okay. And like all these people who skip breakfast, if I tried to do the skip breakfast thing, I'm going to fall out at some point in the middle of the day. I need to, You need to get some calories in there. So, and some protein in there. Are you a sweets breakfast or savory breakfast?
All of it. Both and. I frequently will have a donut or two for breakfast along with like a banana or something like that. But I also, yeah, I mean, I love bacon, sausage, any of that stuff. And again, love pancakes, but I will, steak and eggs is great. So I can go either way. It's, like I said, it's a very versatile meal with all, with, again, there's not, see the problem for me, with, I guess where the difference is on the lunch dinner thing is for me is that you're sharing a lot of the same food between lunch and dinner. Breakfast has its own menu. Breakfast is different. Like you can have breakfast for dinner, but you're still calling it breakfast. It's still pancakes. It's still eggs and bacon. It's got its own specialties. Also, you get more leeway. You can have a donut for breakfast and people don't look at you funny. If you have a donut for dinner, there's something wrong with you.
I can see what you're saying there. I see. The thing is though, I frequently make, like, in terms of the way I plan out meals, I almost never do like big meals at lunch unless there's like a work reason or something like that to do it, you know, yeah. Some eating. So like the, for me, like lunch and dinner are completely different meals. I would never make and eat curry for lunch.
Correct.
Just wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I generally wouldn't eat pasta for lunch.
I was just saying, you don't do, like, again, do I have like leftover pasta for lunch? Yes. Leftovers are like the best lunch meal of all time, but I'm not going to make new pasta for lunch.
The other thing is, if you eat something that's really good for lunch, like the best lunch in the world, as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to eat lunch,
yep.
You're going to go for it, is barbecue. But the problem is, if you eat barbecue for lunch, you will want to sleep from 2 o'clock till 3:30 and maybe longer than that.
Yeah. You'll need to.
Full disclosure, when we still were in like the media room at the Colts before all this started, and we had like, they would sometimes bring in City Barbecue for lunch. And with apologies to our editors, those were easily my least productive days, because if you put it in my stomach, all of the blood goes there to deal with it.
It's actually true of pizza too. Like they used to do pizza for that. And like, if you have pizza in the middle of the day and you have like enough of it, the grease and the thing, you're just like, I want to be done. And guess what? At dinner, yeah. You can't.
So if you eat anything that elevates lunch above its normal station, you're going to want to fall asleep. It doesn't do like, whereas if you eat a good breakfast, you're like, okay, let's go do this.
Let's go do today. Other than pancakes, I will say that. I want a nap after pancakes. I only have pancakes if I know I can take a nap.
They
weigh me down, man.
I'm heavily on the savory side of like breakfast.
That's fair.
Like I like waffles and pancakes. I cannot stand French toast. I don't understand that. I don't get it.
You don't like French toast?
No, I don't like it.
I don't know what to tell you.
It's just a thing that I don't understand.
It's really good.
But I could have pancakes.
Yeah, but it's like better bread.
Not if you make the pancake right.
No, I mean, I love pancakes. I don't want to argue against the two. They're both phenomenal.
It is
weird that you like waffles and pancakes, but don't like French toast.
I don't like French toast. Never have, never will.
Okay.
But the thing is, if I sit down to eat breakfast and like I'm ordering, if I go to a restaurant and order, I cannot get past the part of the menu that is just eggs with like three meats and some peppers. And then like a side of potatoes that I can then eat that are either part of it, or I can just like put them all in there. So it's all in there together.
Yep. Oh yeah. The hash, like a hash is the best part when you can just
throw like it out. Like the breakfast skillet where you will just put it in there and you just cook it all up. Oh yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Give me that. Because I don't even need the, I like it in an omelet, but I'll take the
two kinds of meat, preferably two kinds of meat, like a sausage and a bacon, you know.
I'll do chorizo though with some jalapeno. Make the Mexican version of that.
Oh no. Yeah, no. I put spice in everything. So yes, the preference is for the sausage to be spicy.
Are you a Cholula person, Tabasco person?
No, I am not actually. You
put salsa. No, I want the kick. Mm-hmm. I want a real kick.
I'm salsa or like just put straight jalapenos in it.
Okay. Yeah, that works too.
I've never been a big hot sauce guy. I don't know what it is.
Do yourself a favor. Do yourself a favor and give it a try on pizza. Just give it a shot.
No, I don't put anything on pizza. That's
I'm like telling you, give it. Just try it once, Joel. I'm not asking you to change your life.
No, I have rules. I have rules about pizza.
What do you mean?
I have rules about pizza. You don't add things to pizza.
You're missing out, man. It's just a part of life you need to experience. Also,
pizza is a wonderful food on its own.
It can be enhanced. I know it's hard to believe, but it can be enhanced.
No, I don't think so. Do you do
frozen pizzas at all occasionally?
We have frozen pizzas, but they're mostly for my children.
Okay, well, if you do, do they eat it all the time?
Very close.
Okay, so one of those slices.
Very large growing boys.
one of those slices, just when they're that's left over, throw a little hot sauce on it and give it a shot. It's of no risk to you. It's not even your meal.
It feels wrong, Jim.
It's not your meal. It doesn't matter. Blowing anything.
It feels wrong.
You got to live life, Joel. Don't get too stuck in your curmudgeon ways.
Also, the pizza thing, part of the reason I don't want to put hot sauce on it is that I exclusively go for pizzas that have spice in the sauce and the pepperoni's got to be spicier.
For sure. And I like that too. And again, if I'm ordering pizza from a nice pizza place, I'm probably not putting, I'm not doing hot sauce all the time. A lot of times it's to enhance a frozen pizza or something like that. Or for some reason there's a cheese pizza that I have to eat. I will put hot sauce on it.
Yeah. Every once in a while the cheese thing happens, but you're right about pizza for lunch, though. If you eat anything more than just one slice, nap.
Exactly. Delicious, but dead for the day. Yeah. And then what are you having for dinner after that? Won't you have pizza for lunch? What are you doing? More pizza?
Frequently, as I get older and can't eat everything all the time like I used to, I have to have a big lunch, I'm just not eating dinner. They're I'm eating a snack.
Yeah, a bowl of cereal or something. Yeah.
And then I've kind of ruined a really good meal.
You've set off, I agree, completely. You've ruined the day. And again, you've picked the wrong meal to go nuts on. Because now you can't take a nap. You've ruined your work productivity. And now at dinner time, you're just what do I do?
The reason Jim's a breakfast guy over dinner, I'm a dinner guy over breakfast. The reason I'm dinner over breakfast is because I feel like dinner is most often the meal that you can enjoy. Really enjoy.
Yeah. Okay. Most often, 100%, except that, like I said, it's those special, when I'm out to breakfast on a Sunday, it's just going to be a good day because I'm having breakfast.
No, yeah.
So I like that feeling a lot.
One of the things that's driven me the most, that I miss the most from being in the COVID era is that we haven't really been going out to restaurants. We get takeout and bring it home.
Yeah.
You don't go to the Roost here in Fisher. Shout out to the Roost. And order their skillet and bring it back. I love it when it's there, but I don't know if I want it after it's been in a. Plus, then you have to get up and leave your house on a day that you want to enjoy the breakfast. You're not there to sit down. So
I will say
breakfast just isn't as much of a. And I've been missing it.
Takeout breakfast is underrated. It's not as good as takeout dinner. I agree, but takeout breakfast is still pretty good. If you can get it quick and you can get back to your house and eat it quick, it's before it gets cold, you're okay. It's underrated. I've done it a few times in the last few years.
Maybe we'll have to try it. Maybe. The other thing is I'm also, I'm pretty good at dinner too, but I'm pretty good at breakfast. I'm pretty good at cooking it myself. So it's do I have to leave the house or not?
Right.
The one thing that we'll go out for breakfast is Kolache Factory, which is.
You know what that is.
Oh, dude. Anybody who's ever spent some time in Texas knows what a kolache is. It's basically this wonderful little thing of bread. And then they put all the breakfast stuff in it. It is kind of sweet, Hawaiian type thing.
Okay.
Going on. And so good. It's
sounds
so good.
Tasty.
And there's kolache factories here. There's one out by me on Allisonville Road. But I think there's other ones in the area. They're great. Yeah, the ranchero one, the one that they put the jalapenos in, that's the move.
I'm really not a salsa breakfast guy. I don't want that. I don't want the cold with the hot most of the time.
I can see that.
But I don't have a problem with it. I generally don't go that direction.
But I started being a salsa with breakfast guy when I lived in Texas because Texas is less chunky, more more of a liquidy, and it's easier to put on stuff and it gets more into it.
Yeah. I like the taste. I just don't like the cold hot, but
yeah, if I'm going into the day and I have to, and it's okay, you get to eat two meals today, one of them's going, it's always lunch.
Yeah, I agree. Especially because if you can eat a big breakfast, you don't even need lunch.
Like on Christmas Day, 100% just going to eat like a gorgeous, incredible breakfast and then maybe snack on something in the middle of the day and then go back for a gorgeous dinner. Just buy lunch.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like I said, I'm going to put this to a vote at one point. Maybe I'll put it out there again. If you're throwing away a meal of the day, which one are you throwing away?
And I have a suspicion that this is our hottest podcast take.
I think there are more crazy people out there than we want to believe.
It's almost bad that we don't have a guest on to dissent with us, because you and I are in such agreement here. But my suspicion is that it's people would go for breakfast or would kill breakfast before they'd kill lunch.
I agree. And here's the problem. I judge those people. it's not my fault, to be fair. It's objectively they're wrong. So
also if you're from Wisconsin and you like really good cheese, we do like the cheese by itself at breakfast.
That works.
Like sometimes I'll make two eggs and then I'll just lop off some Colby cheese and just eat it. Just like that. Don't have to put it on anything. Don't have to ruin it with some other terrible food. Like
That's called Wisconsin rules breakfast. That's what that's called.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that. I don't think I've ever done that, but I'm game. I'm not going to turn it away if somebody offered me some cheese.
I mean, you got to do it with really good cheese. You're not doing that like the local stuff, but Like if you get like if I go to the dairy that's by my house from back home and I bring back like a bunch of Colby, that's part that will occupy a certain spot on the breakfast where it's just like, I'm just gonna eat cheese.
I might have to do that. This is the biggest like ridiculousness in the world, but my sister lives and works in Wisconsin and sells cheese for a living. So
your sister is a hero and should be protected at all costs.
And she is. She's doing quite well.
That is a noble profession and art.
I thought it was the only profession in Wisconsin. I teased her quite a bit.
A lot of the professions in Wisconsin deal with something involved in the cheese making process.
Yeah, cheese and dairy, man. That's it. You do it right. You guys are crazy up there. So no, but like I said, I appreciate what you contribute. Both the spotted cow and cheese. Like, give me all of it.
Yeah, Wisconsin decided, okay, if we're going to do food, like if we're going to have food, we're going to be really good at beer, sausage, and cheese. And I just don't know how you can be upset with that.
No, I don't. I love Wisconsin. Like I said, I love Wisconsin because of it. Because they picked the right things to be good at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, you know what the best part of it? We didn't even get to this because it's a great segue. Guess what you can have for breakfast? Sausage. You can have brats because you're tailgating and it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's 100% true. 100% true.
So yeah. Anyway, this is. I'm going to put a poll up with the podcast and see what you guys all think. And anybody who disagrees with us, I have a personal problem with you. Just know that. I don't know if that affects your day at all, but that's true. All right, that's it for us on the Colts Cover 2 podcast. We have plenty of stuff up. Joel, what are you writing today, tomorrow? What do you got?
I'm writing about the Colts have been really good against the run, but this is a different kind of test because it's a weird running game. It's more like a college running game at times than it is an NFL running game.
I like that. Also go read his story on Philip Rivers kind of being smart in terms of like the way he's on bad plays. What is he doing? It's a really good story. It's a really good like look at what Philip Rivers is, again, being intelligent, which is a decent segue to the story I wrote. I think it's posted now, is about how Philip Rivers' intelligence is just kind of helping and spreading all over the Colts. Guys like Kenny Moore and Darius Leonard and Justin Houston are all drawing bits of information from him. I got a chance to talk to Eric Weddle, as you guys know. I've mentioned him a couple times on the podcast about kind of the way he helped him turn into an all-pro safety. So some really cool stuff there. So check that out. I'll be writing about Tyquan and some injuries, and that's it. So yeah. And then we'll have hopefully COVID, you know, relenting. We'll have a game to cover on Sunday.
Yep. Yeah. We didn't bring this up yet because our gut is that it's not a big issue yet with a staff member testing positive today.
Yeah. For the Colts. Yeah. So hopefully when you're listening to this, that's still true. And we're still watching, covering and playing a game on Sunday. So
I think the big reason is that I think the big reason we feel that way is because they're still practicing.
Yeah,
and we know from the previous one that they would have canceled practice if they were worried about the team, like the team you see on the field.
Yeah.
I don't know when you're listening to this, but the good news for Jim and I is that we are taping this after we've eaten lunch. So we're already through the worst meal of the day.
100%. And what did you have? Did you have the chicken?
For lunch, I had a salad with chicken. Yeah.
I had peanut butter and jelly with some tortilla chips because it's just about making it through the meal.
I mean, was it good? Like, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, it's fine. I got protein in me. Good.
I like peanut butter and jelly. I have no problem with it. But you know what you can have? Fine. You know when you can have peanut butter and jelly for breakfast? So whatever.
I actually sort of prefer to eat peanut butter for breakfast as like an open face, just put it on the bread next to your eggs.
Oh, okay. I like it on a bagel. I'll do a peanut butter bagel every once in a while for breakfast.
Peanut butter bagel is good too. Like, yeah, I kind of would prefer peanut butter and breakfast. For me, it's almost a breakfast food.
It's a smart idea because it gives you quite a bit of energy without like super weighing you down. So peanuts are great for that. So yeah, there's your nutrition updates and facts for the day. You're welcome, everyone. And join us again on Sunday after the game. Should be up, I don't know, 9 o'clock-ish. We'll be done around then. So thanks for joining us and talk to you again later.